This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we will talk with U.S. Senator Mary Landrieu. She has signed up for a fourth run for her seat in the United States Senate. It all started in 1996 with a 5,788 vote victory over Woody Jenkins. And now, Mary Landrieu faces the challenge of another Baton Rougean, Bill Cassidy. Can she pull it out? 10 weeks from tomorrow is Election Day. Also, on the show, we'll talk with Sally Nungesser, the veteran Republican political consultant, about the election of 2014. Qualifying is over and done with, and there were a few surprises, but mostly it was what we thought it would be. And, of course, there's a battle royal that will take place for the 6th Congressional District race. Now the news on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Frank Barnett is producing, and in just a bit, we're going to hear from U.S. Senator Mary Landrieu. But I hope you don't mind if I begin today's show with a point of personal privilege. For almost 11 years, we've been together at this time and this place, interacting as Ricky Stockner, our late great producer, used to say, with newsmakers down the street and around the world. And the WRKF audience is the best in Louisiana. It's been my pleasure to be with you on this program since early 2004. And the commitment to public radio in this area is evident by your knowledge, your devotion, your interaction. Collectively, at times, you made this station the top-rated station in public radio in America. And I'm honored that you listen to this program when you could be doing so many other things important in your life. You may listen to be amused or to get mad, but you're here, and I appreciate your presence. And since 2004, we've been together through a serious accident that sidelined me for a few months and through a significant job change for me 8 years ago. I arrived at WRKF in October of 2003 as station manager, and then returned to my previous home at the Louisiana Radio Network as general manager 3 years later. And because of the relationship with you and through the benevolence of the WRKF station manager, David Gordon, I have remained on the air continuously despite another change that came in 2010 when, along with other people, I acquired a controlling interest in the Louisiana Radio Network and Tiger Rag Magazine. Our company is a for-profit organization with affiliated radio stations in every corner of the state. And one of those is WBRP, Talk 107.3 in Baton Rouge. And last week, our board of directors at LRN came to the conclusion that from a financial standpoint, it was vital for this show to move to a commercial station. And therefore, on November 3rd, I will move to a new home in Baton Rouge from 4 to 6 p.m., Monday through Friday, and we will have some affiliate stations in other parts of Louisiana as well. And for the next 10 weeks, it will be programming as usual, right here on WRKF from 9 to 10 and from 8 to 9 p.m., and we will continue our tradition of quality news that is exclusive to this market on this station. I've been blessed to occupy one of the most precious pieces of radio real estate in this country for more than a decade. It's because of you and the management of our station that this relationship has prospered, with me at a remote location doing the show at LRN since 2006. And even though I'm moving down the dial at a different time, our audience occupies a place in my heart that made this a soul-searching decision. Change is uncertain, but I am certain that WRKF will continue to thrive under the direction of David Gordon and its board, and that my place in our community will be enhanced by this new endeavor that will allow 2 hours of intelligent talk and afternoon drive at my new home. We will proceed through our Halloween finale on WRKF with the same kind of discussion that's been a staple of this station and this program, and I thank you for this moment of personal reflection and for 11 years of remarkable memories with you and our guests. You're listening to WRKF 89.3 And our guest at this time is Senator Mary Landrieu, now qualified for a fourth run for the United States Senate, having won in 1996, 2002, and 2008. Good morning, Senator Landrieu.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on.
Well, tell us about the quest for your fourth term. This is an environment that some say is not fertile for re-election. How do you see it?
Well, I think people are going to be looking for, in this election, for leadership and effectiveness. And many people in Louisiana understand the importance of the Energy Committee. It's just not any committee in Washington. It's the chairmanship of the Energy Committee. And what a shame that would be to give that up to another state or to throw that clout away that now really belongs to the people of Louisiana. And I think people are going to be looking to see who can be effective, even with gridlock in Washington. And when they look at my record, it speaks for itself. You know, passing Joe Mesa at a time when Congress couldn't pass very much of anything, which is the revenue-sharing bill that helps secure our coast, or getting the Restore Act passed after the Deepwater Horizon, the flood insurance reform bill, which I was instrumental in passing with 72 votes in the Senate. And even with gridlock in Washington, you know, our delegation's not gridlocked. We work together for people. And I think that message is hopefully coming across, and hopefully people will respond.
Your primary opponent, Congressman Cassidy, is blaming you for the lack of success with the Keystone Pipeline. Is that fair?
Well, first of all, I've got several opponents. One of them is Colonel Manis. Robert Manis, who served 30 years in the Air Force and is an executive with Entergy and has quite a few supporters in this race, and I want to thank him for his service, of course, and then Congressman Cassidy. But, you know, people are getting very concerned in our state about Congressman Cassidy's attempts and votes to raise the Social Security age to 70. There are many people, my television commercials are showing that, you know, work at very hard jobs, and to keep them, you know, working at these hard jobs until 70, jobs like the guy Mike that's on my ads, I just think is wrong. And he did that while supporting tax breaks for people that make over $1 million a year. And I just don't think people are going to support that kind of leadership. So he's going to have some hard time explaining that to people. And if he'll agree to the debates, which he hasn't yet, and I'm looking forward to debating him about that and many other things.
But as far as the Keystone Pipeline, as chair of the Energy Committee, how much influence can you have in making this a reality?
Well, I've supported the Keystone Pipeline for years, as you may know, and passed it out of my committee as a Democratic chair, passed the Keystone Pipeline out of my committee when the many in the Democratic Party are not for it, so I've already stood up to the Democratic Party and to this administration by doing that. I've increased the number of Democratic votes in the Senate from 3 to 11. We need to get 4 more votes, and I'm working very hard on it. But it's going to take all of Congress to move that forward. I've always supported the oil and gas industry. That's why they're supporting me in this election. That's why many, many, many companies and individuals have said, look, Mary's been a champion for us for many years. We're all in the oil and gas business in some way, directly or indirectly, in Louisiana. And I'm proud of the industry. We can do it better. We need to, of course, maintain an eye on cleaning up our environment and making sure our coast is secure. So I think he's making that argument, but I'm not sure he's going to get very far with it.
You have been to the post, I count, 8 times, 6 times statewide, only lost once, have had great success running in a state that has been trending Republican in recent time. What will have to happen for you to have success come November 4th?
Well, I believe that just consistent message and communication and leadership. I've now worked with 3 presidents of very different, you know, different parties, President Bush, President Clinton, President Obama. I've worked with 6 governors of different parties and been able always, under even the most difficult conditions, to deliver for the state of Louisiana. And while people are concerned about these national issues, at the end of the day, people want jobs and economic opportunity right here at home. They want levees that don't break. They want highways. that they can get back and forth to work and market. And they really want to see someone, I think, like I am, focused on their home state, not spending time, you know, in Iowa, New Hampshire, or other places that some of our elected officials have been going lately and get the job done right here at home. So that's what I've been successful in the past, and I think that kind of leadership is going to be communicated and will help us win in November, which is to get 50% of the vote in the first primary.
You made reference to the fact that the congressman has not committed to debates. Is that a significant thing? It's something quite often incumbents don't do, but you have, I think, committed to four of them. What's your take on whether or not you'll have a chance to meet your primary challenger face-to-face?
Well, I most certainly hope so. I mean, he's the one challenging me. I think that he should, you know, be the first one to agree to debates to try to outline for people why he's trying to oust me or what the reasons are that that he should get in this, you know, get in this position. So it is quite unusual. I am very interested and anxious to debate him and Colonel Manis. Colonel Manis opposed our efforts to reform flood insurance. I think that's going to be hard to explain to 450,000 people in our state that actually depend on policies they can afford to live in their homes where they work. I think Bill Cassidy is going to have a hard time explaining why he voted to raise the retirement age to 70 and why he's tried to privatize Social Security and voted for the Ryan budget that slashes lots of important programs for our state. And, you know, but that's what elections are about, is about talking to people about the issues. And I'm hoping he will agree to the debate so we can fully vet and answer the public's questions and concerns.
Lastly, Senator, as far as issues, is there an issue or two or three that are most profound in this race?
Well, yes, there are a few that are, but I'd like to say they're very profound for the state of Louisiana, and one of them, of course, is coastal restoration and recovery and sustainability. If we don't really secure a significant amount of revenues from our offshore oil and gas industry, which right now is owing 100% to the federal government, and if we don't, which I've already passed the bill, but we need to remove the cap, accelerate the funding, you know, all of Louisiana is going to be at risk. I mean, we're losing a football field every 30 seconds. We've got the plan. We've got a master plan. We've got the science. We've got really good political buy-in from across the political spectrum. What we need is the money, and that is what, as chair of the Energy Committee, I can help deliver. If I could pass COMESA as a freshman member of the committee, I most certainly can pass the FAIR Act as the chairman of the committee, and for me, and I think for people in Louisiana, that is crucial. I think opening up exports for natural gas, building the Keystone Pipeline, supporting energy, self-sufficiency for our country is also very important to take advantage of this energy renaissance in America. And I think those issues are at least what most people ask me about when I'm on the campaign trail.
Are you enjoying it?
I am, actually. I'm really enjoying it, and just meeting the most wonderful people and seeing all the great progress in our state. Our unemployment rate is relatively low. That's because natural gas and this uptick in our petrochemical industry as well. And I'm looking forward to continuing that and very much focused on closing the skills gap. You know, we've got jobs going wanting. We've got people that want jobs. In some instances, we have failed as a community to create opportunities for people to get the skills they need to get more than minimum wage jobs, and that's something that I'm working on with many leaders. I'm proud to have the support of some of the outstanding Republican leaders, Democratic leaders, and independent business leaders in our state to work on that issue.
Senator, we thank you and look forward to another visit soon. And we shall return with Sally Nungesser after this 90-second pause on 89.3 WRKF. 297-5633 is your number outside the area, 877-217-5757, and Inkstershow at WRKF.org. You could tweet us at Jim Inkstershow. Sally Nungesser on what's happening in Louisiana politics and American politics. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Frank Barnett is producing. 297-5633 is your number. Outside the area, 877-217-5757. And the veteran political strategist Sally Nungesser is with us. She has emerged as one of the top GOP political operatives in our state and elsewhere. And she, of course, will be busy in the next 10 weeks and probably in the next 10 years. But, oh, by the way, we're only 14 months away from a governor's election in Louisiana. Good morning, Sally.
Good morning, Jim.
And starting with Mary Landrieu, you kind of started with her, too, back in, Dave Treen's only term as governor. That was when she began her tenure in the House of Representatives. I think she's about a year older than you, but she and Quentin Dastugue were practically babies when they were elected to the House of Representatives.
Yeah, they were very young. I think they were they the youngest? I know you know.
Well, they may have been. She was. They were both
23.
He was 23. Yeah, they were both 23 when they were elected, and he was a month younger than she. But and of course, Quentin ended up being the Republican nominee for governor in 1995. But along came a guy named Mike Foster who kind of elbowed him out of the way.
Exactly.
But what do you remember about those years with David Connor Treen? By the way, Quentin in those days was a Democrat, as was just about everybody else in the Louisiana legislature. There were a few. Ken Hollis was there.
Yeah.
But there weren't many Republicans.
No, you're right. You're right. Which, you know, is looking back and looking at where we are now, it's pretty amazing how many more Republicans there are. Yeah, it was an interesting time. And yeah, I was very young back then too, and we had a good time. I remember that. And I got to know Quentin and Mary and during that time. And I like Mary, but I think she's got real problems this year, and it's basically because of her party registration. She's going to have to vote for Harry Reid, and explaining that is just not going to be easy to the people of Louisiana. So,
but as I recall, in 2008, she was supported by Governor Treen in a race against John Kennedy. She's got Boise Bollinger's support this time. Mm-hmm. She has some of your friends on her side.
She does, but again, I go back to the fact that, you know, she talks about her clout in Washington. Well, the first vote that she's going to make is going to be for somebody who hates the energy industry and is really doing everything he can to destroy it, and his name is Harry Reid, and she's going to vote for him to basically be the leader of the Senate. That's going to be her first vote, and she's voted for him before. She's going to have to vote for him again because she is a Democrat, and so people aren't going to vote for her this time. Right. I just really don't believe so. And then, of course, she's got her airplane problems, which I think shows an arrogance. She's been there a little too long. You know, I drive around Louisiana all the time. It's not that far from place to place. You don't need to be taking private planes, and you certainly don't need to be charging them to the taxpayers.
Well, Governor Jindal travels on an airplane to just about everywhere he goes, but he is the governor. Does that make a difference?
No, I really would encourage him to ride around Louisiana too. I think you see a lot on the ground that you don't see when you do a flyover. So I would encourage everybody to drive around, especially our leaders, our public servants, to stay on the ground and kind of get to know the people and how the people of Louisiana live.
Bill Cassidy, of course, is the primary opponent for Mary Landrieu, and we talked about that in our discussion with her. And her Senator Landrieu's campaign staff has issued a press release saying qualifying for the U.S. Senate seat in Louisiana has ended, and Congressman Bill Cassidy still refuses to provide Louisianians with a list of debates he will participate in. He is being somewhat cagey, coy. I'm somewhat surprised. He's campaigning as though he's an incumbent with a big lead.
Well, I think he is the big winner at this point, and I think her only hope is to try to get him to make some kind of mistake that she can exploit to her advantage. So given that, I don't know if it's not a wise move on his part to lay low and keep out of her direct line of fire. So,
well, she does have some things like this Chartergate thing. He could have a field day with that if he chose to do it. But but he has to this point decided to be above the fray. But it looks like there will be a runoff between those two, most probably. Yeah. At that point, I think he's got to debate her.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be then a race to see who can turn out voters in December. That's what I really kind of hate about how we have our election system is, you know, these December runoff elections.
You don't like that?
People just aren't paying attention, you know. It's just very hard to turn out your voters. I don't care, you know, how serious you are about voting. It's very hard to remember to go vote in the midst of Christmas shopping. So that's going to be a problem for both campaigns, though. Both campaigns are going to have to figure out how to get their voters' attention.
297-5633, your number. Charles on North Foster, good morning. You're on the air with Sally Nungesser. Hi, Charles.
Good morning, gentlemen. Good morning to your guests. Ms. Nungesser, I see if you raised about $8 million for our good governor. I would ask, how much of that came from the Koch brothers, and what do you think about Bill Cassidy voting to eliminate FEMA?
Actually, I don't think I've ever been on. Well, I take that back. I think maybe one of my campaigns got a $5,000 check from the Koch brothers, but that's not something that I'm really that familiar with. And I do not work for Governor Jindal anymore. I only worked for him through 2007. Did some special projects for him then, so I'm not working for him now. And so I don't know what his Koch brother totals are. But the Koch brothers aren't bad guys. They're you know, good, I think, well-intentioned people who have built an amazing business over the years. And I think now, if you look at their charitable giving, they're not bad people. I think they're really doing things that they think are going to help this country. I don't think that they're in it they don't need any more money, so they're not in it to get more money. I think that's crazy when people say they're in it to get more money. They're worth billions.
Well, David Vitter has called them heroes, and next year you'll be on the opposite side of Senator Vitter in a campaign.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, very proud of that.
You're with the Lieutenant Governor.
Very proud to be with Lieutenant Governor Darden, yeah.
What is the major distinction between him and Senator Vitter?
The ability to work with other people, which I think is lacking in this governor. I think a lot of people are going to be looking for somebody with Governor Darden's ability to sit around a table, actually listen to people, and try to bring people together to move the state forward. I think everybody's going to be kind of tired of having things dictated and lots of lawsuits and angry and fighting, and you know, so I think the contrast is going to be great for Governor Darden. I think he's going to do very well.
It sounds like you're complimenting Jay Darden, and you're also in some ways criticizing David Vitter, and through the years he's been acknowledged as a person who stirs it up. Perhaps he'd make a good talk show host. He does manage to inflame people, sometimes without even trying, but other times it does appear that he's trying. Billy Tozan used to say, a Buddy Romer, he's a bomb thrower.
I think that, you know, I think that he would agree with you. I think he does throw bombs enough. But I'm not going to say that's necessarily a bad thing when you're sitting in a legislative body like the U.S. Senate. I think sometimes you have to throw some bombs to get some attention, so I don't really fault him for that. But I don't think that's a good trait for a governor. So I think, you know, definitely that Governor Darden would make a better governor for our state, and that's why I'm on his team.
Well, I would think that if Jay Darden were in a runoff with David Vitter, he would win because he would get almost all of the Democratic vote. And he would get enough of the Republican vote that he would win in a runoff against Senator Vitter. But getting there is going to be the issue. And I hear through the grapevine that Scott Angell may very well get in the governor's election. If that's the case, you're going to have three prominent Republicans. And, of course, John Kennedy's still on the fence.
Yeah, and I think at that point, you know, you could have 20 people get in the governor's race, because all of a sudden then you only need a very small piece of the pie in order to make it to the runoff. And so then it becomes a real free-for-all. So I think if Scott Angell does get in it, I think you'll probably see John Kennedy get in it. You'll see maybe some people we're not even thinking of today. Maybe Jim Bernhardt. I mean, who knows?
Well,
who knows who's going to get in?
It conceivably could be very much like the 6th district race is right now, mm-hmm. with one well-known Democrat. Mm-hmm. And an array of Republicans, and the Republicans are battling to get in a runoff with a Democrat, and the Republicans, of course, is the way our state is configured now, you would think the Republicans would have an advantage. But you also got to figure, at least from this perspective, it appears that Vitter has a base of at least 20%. And if 20% makes a runoff, then he's in a runoff with John Bel Edwards or Mitch Landrieu or Jim Bernhardt. And it would appear that then suddenly the inertia switches to Senator Bitter.
Yeah, but I don't know if you saw recently. I mean, the far right, the Tea Party element in the state came out and attacked him for a stance on Common Core. So, how solid, you know? So if somebody gets in and is a Common Core opponent, they could peel votes off of David Vitter.
Senator Darden, Governor Darden, he's sounding a lot like a Common Core guy too, though.
He is. But what I'm saying is that, you know, you're talking about percentages and small percentages, and you're talking about a lot of people getting in maybe on one issue like that, and therefore peeling off votes from other people. And like I said, it becomes a real free-for-all, and it becomes a matter of who has the strongest support. And I have to tell you that I don't see Governor Darden's people going very far. They've been with him for a long time. He's faced a lot of people to the right, to the left. You know, he keeps coming out victorious because he has got a very strong base of support of people who really love him and have loved him long term. You know, I tell people that he's the only client I've ever had who had a fundraiser amongst his with his middle school class. That's how long he keeps friends. So he's got a very strong base, and I think that will do him well. I don't think, you know, I don't know how he feels. I'm not worried about having 20 people in the race or having five people in the race. I think he's good.
Going to do it, of course.
Yeah. I do.
You're being paid to think that way.
I'm still a true believer. I have figured out a way to make my passion into my occupation, but I'm still somebody who's in it.
The last guy to beat Darden in a race was Larry Bankston in 1987. So there's no doubt that Governor Darden will be formidable. And David Vitter has never lost a race. So put those two together and something's got to give. And of course, Governor Darden is also the only candidate with a son who's a stand-up comic in Los Angeles, doing very well. So
I know. He was on the pizza commercial. I don't know if you saw him. Yeah.
Here's a question from Faye asking about Jay Darden's support of the Stelle plan when he was in the state Senate, a plan that many believe was a good thing. How does he stand on Stelle now?
You know, I don't know. I have not asked him that, and I've not heard him speak on that, so I don't want to put words in his mouth.
Well, he was on this show and indicated that it was not revenue neutral and that he understood the aversion that some people have to it, but I don't know that it was ever thought to be revenue neutral. The whole idea was that it would grow with the economy. And there are people I know, because I've talked with them in the inner sanctum of the Jindal camp, who believe that Stelle would have enabled the governor to avert all these cuts to higher education.
Absolutely, it would have. And I was a proponent of Stelle myself. And I think where maybe it went wrong is I think it was sold as revenue neutral because the sales taxes that it replaced were also supposed to grow. And so, in other words, as it grew, supposedly the sales taxes would grow and it would be an equal growth. And I think it ended up being even a bigger growth because our income grew faster than the sales taxes or something to that effect. And so, therefore, it wasn't revenue neutral. But that's, like I said many times on this show, I'm not a policy person, but that's my rudimentary understanding of what happened.
297-5633 for Sally Nungesser, veteran Republican political consultant, and she was Republican before Republican was cool. Ironically, you were with Jay Darden last go around, and he beat a guy in a fairly close race named Nungesser. How was that experience?
Not good. Jay was nice to stick with me during that because it was tough, I think, on both of us. People were accusing me of being a spy and accusing him of being naive to think that I wasn't a spy. So it was not a comfortable year, but I sat down with my cousin and explained to him that, you know, I was going to be on the other side and he needed to find somebody else to run against. But, you know, sometimes you don't listen to members of your family. Well, but he tells me now that I was correct, that he should have found somebody else to run against.
Well, he got over 47% of the vote, so it was not a campaign without some success. But some say if you don't win, it's
something that is it's difficult to spend all the time, money, energy that's necessary to run a campaign and then lose no matter how close it is. But he's running again, and conceivably we could have Governor Darden and Lieutenant Governor Nungesser.
Yep. And I think they'd get along fine.
Yeah. Well, Sally, of course, was almost elected insurance commissioner many years ago.
That wasn't even close, Jim, but thank you.
How was that experience as a candidate?
Well, I think, you know, I think it's helped me in my career, that my career of choice, which is now to do fundraising for people, because I actually had to do it for myself. So I think it was helpful in that. But I tell candidates that I don't understand why they want to do it, because I feel like it was like running around without your clothes on for 6 months is how it felt to me. It was really not fun.
So. Well, you were in a runoff with Jim Brown, and he's a savage campaigner and unafraid to just go where you got to go to win, and he usually won, and he won against you, but you did make a runoff, and it was a competitive race, and it's after that race you decided no more.
No, and I always say that I won that race because he went to jail, so.
That was the next, well.
So, their definitions of winning. So.
Well, in 91, when Edwards beat Duke, both of them went to jail. So, I guess Buddy Romer really won.
Yeah,
he
exactly.
really won that race, right?
under my theory of things, yeah.
All right. 297-5633 for Sally Nungesser, who at the age of 23 was the press secretary for David Connor Treen, the first Republican since Reconstruction to be governor of Louisiana. Why has our state evolved to be a solidly red state from March 12, 1980, when Dave Treen took the oath of office? There were almost no Republicans in the state legislature.
Well, you know, I think there's a national trend, of course, but, you know, on the local level, I was explaining to a couple of people who were in the Garrett Graves campaign, which I'm on now, that when I got involved in politics, it was really an anti-corruption movement. As much as it was a philosophical movement, we were definitely an anti-Edwards party, and we were in the business of trying to defeat him and bring some good government, you know, to Louisiana. I mean, I remember Treen's slogan for years was "Keep it clean with Treen," and I mean that's really what a lot of it was about back then.
I remember Edwards, when the state was having financial woes in Treen's term, as it did in Edwards' third term. Mm-hmm. But because of that, he said, Treen's slogan is, keep it Treen, he must have. But Edwin Edwards is back.
I know. I can't believe at this stage in my career, I'm still running campaigns against Edwin Edwards. Yeah, but got a really good client and really good candidate, and I'm confident that Garrett's gonna do well against him. So we will talk about
that race. And mind you, Sally is a partisan. She's working for Garrett Graves, who has raised more money, probably because of Sally, than anybody else.
No, can't take credit.
297-5633 is your number. 877-217-5757. Back after this 90-second pause on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Sally Nungesser is the guest, a Republican political consultant. And as we hit the break, we were discussing fact that Louisiana has veered red, and there was a fascinating study in yesterday's New York Times by Robert Gebeloff. He's a reporter for the Times, and David Leonard, he is the editor of The Upshot. He said, Californians have moved to Colorado and Nevada, Massachusetts natives have moved to New Hampshire, New Yorkers have moved to North Carolina and Virginia, and of course continue to move to Florida. And so over the last few decades, residents of many traditionally liberal states have moved to states that were once more conservative. And this pattern has played an important role in helping the Democratic Party win the last two presidential elections in four of the last six. And the column by Paul Krugman today in the New York Times indicates that people, the 20 million people in America who were born in the great state of New York, which of course is a solidly blue state, of those 20 million who were actually born in New York, many of them live in the South, meaning places like Florida, maybe even Louisiana, but most likely Florida and Georgia and North Carolina. And it's a situation in which the politics have veered to the left for national elections and to the right for congressional elections. So in our lifetime, we're approximately the same age. Do you think we're going to have a succession of Democratic presidents and Republican-controlled Congresses?
No. I think this president has made it perfectly clear that we need a serious change in the presidency this next time. And I think we will see that. I think we'll see a Republican president in the next election.
The next election. So Bobby beats Hillary?
Yeah, that's it. That's the field.
It could be.
Could be. Yeah. It's he's, you know, and people discount Bobby's chances of making the ticket without the recognition that he is a minority and somebody that is not just another Republican old white guy to put on the ticket. I mean, he is an attractive, demographically attractive candidate, and he's got some abilities. He's got some political talents, obviously.
So January 20th, 2017, which is less than 29 months away?
Mm-hmm.
Geez, that's right. Less than 29 months. Bobby Jindal will be taking the oath of office as the 45th American president. HB in Denham Springs. HB, good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. Miss Sally, I recently saw a poll that showed Congress's approval rating at an all-time low. What do you think it's going to take to get our country straightened out both on a national level and international level with a $17 trillion debt? Thank you, ma'am.
Well, I think the first step is this year. We need to take the Senate. The Republicans need to take the Senate, and then we need to take the presidency. And when we get all three, we need to remember our principles and the things that made us Republicans in the first place and make sure we do a good job of running the country once we get that mm-hmm. control. Right now, you know, you've got House Republicans, Senate Democrats, presidency Democrats, and people are complaining that nothing is getting done, but that's the way the system is designed. You know, the system's designed not to allow a lot of movement when the country's undecided about which direction they want to go. But I think there's a recognition that not only the stalemate, but that the things that the president's doing without basically the right to do it, but he's still doing it, to move the country to the left, I think people are recognizing is not the right way. So I think that's going to make it clear that we need to move to the right, and that'll happen with the elections this year and next.
Well, in 1980, when Sally was David Treen's press secretary, the old axiom was he could hold the Republican convention in a phone booth, and that has changed. But why were you a Republican before all these others jumped on the GOP train?
Well, some of the credit goes to my uncle. Some of it goes to Ronald Reagan, which he brought me to hear speak at a very young age.
But in 1980, he was not yet president. He became, so this must have been 76, huh?
Mm-hmm.
1976,
mm-hmm.
when you were 19 years old.
Yes.
You were swooning over the Gipper, right?
I was. And Gerald, you know, you took me to dinners where I got to hear Gerald Ford. I got to hear all of the, you know, Barry Goldwater. I got to hear all the leading conservative minds of the time. I got to hear them personally in the audience, and I'll be forever grateful for that education. It was wonderful.
Sally Nungesser, still going strong, and in the 6th District, her candidate is Garrett Graves, who was on this show last week, and of course he got many pointed questions, but I commend him for coming on the show, and hopefully he'll do so again. I even got a thank you note from his campaign manager, so I'm hopeful he'll be back, but he has a crowded field of candidates in that race with him, and some at least three well-known Republicans in State Representative Lenar Whitney, Dan Clater, State Senator, and Paul Dietzel, who's been campaigning longer and harder than any of the others. So there's your I think you and I can agree Edwin Edwards makes the runoff, barring something unforeseen.
And I think Garrett makes the runoff. And the
but
reason,
what will it take? Mm-hmm. Does it take 10%, 15%, 20%, 25%? What will it take?
I haven't really looked at the numbers on what it's going to take, but the reason why I'm very confident in my candidate is he's the smartest guy in the race. He's got the best background to run, and I think, you know, it's evident in how the level of support that he's gotten from people. And, you know, fundraising, sometimes people look at fundraising and go, just because you have the most money doesn't mean, but you have to look at the 800 plus donors that he's convinced that he's the best guy. You know, that takes a lot of telling people, convincing people that you are somebody who can go up there and do the job and do the job well. And he's done, I can get him in the room with anybody. He can sell them. He can get them. And in addition to that, he's got political support across the district and across the state. That's very impressive that people are willing to, with 13 people in the race, people are still willing to be on his invitations and try to help him win this election, because I think they're also convinced that he'll be a great congressman.
All right, 297-5633, sixth district race is inviting also a December runoff, which means that Edwin Edwards almost certainly will be in a runoff with one of the Republicans, and it most likely will be either Garrett Graves or Dan Clater or Paul Dietzel or Lenar Whitney, and it may take as few as one vote in five to make the runoff, and then the inertia changes and the Republican becomes the favorite in the runoff against the Cajun Prince, and you could be running against him just as you did in 1983 when David Treen, a sitting governor and a relatively popular governor,
had like an almost 80% approval rating.
Got 37% of the votes against Edwin Edwards. Edwards has magic. Let's face it. If he walked in a room with 1,000 people who hated him, they would pay attention.
Yeah, and really, it's hard to hate him. I mean, you know him. I know him. He's charming. He is absolutely charming. Unfortunately, he's the wrong choice again.
So. All right. A listener, Terry, asks, what does Garrett Graves think about this terrible beheading of James Foley in Syria? What should be done? I don't know if you talked to the candidate about this. What do you think should be done about the assailants in this case?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I think I'm like everybody else in this country, wishing that we could find them and behead them back,
behead
or do
them.
do something horrible to them. I have not discussed it with the candidate at all. But it's a horrible.
Apparently,
horrible thing.
The guy who did it is now known. He is a rapper from Great Britain, 24-year-old London rapper. Abdel Barry, his father was extradited to the United States from Britain in 2012 after a long battle to face terrorism charges and Al-Qaeda's bombing of two American embassies in East Africa in 1998. So if this guy is found, presumably he would be put to death. I can't imagine a worse way to go than this. And a guy who had no stake in this, a journalist for all things.
Yeah. It wasn't like he was trying to kill this guy or his family. There was no sane reason for doing this. But I think the shocking thing, you're right, that he's somebody lived in London and, you know, had, it's just, you know, sometimes you think that somebody who was brought up in a cave, maybe you don't understand their reasoning, but this is not somebody that we don't know. It doesn't make any sense. I don't know what to say about
Michael
it.
Michael at LSU. Michael, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning, Jim. My question is for Sally. Does she really think it would be appropriate to describe the American feeling about what's happened, that we want to go behead other people? I think that's a little extreme.
Yeah, anger, I guess, is what I was trying to explain, express, and I guess I did a poor job of it. Just very angry about them doing this. I mean, to anyone, but to somebody who could have been, you know, your brother, your friend, it's hard.
Okay, 297-5633. Rick Causey writes, neither of the parties are getting anything done. Truly a confederacy of dunces and greed. It's time to revamp the whole shebang and virtually start over. Rick Causey sounding like he might be a Rufus Craig guy in the 6th District congressional race. The Congress You talked about Obama having a low approval rating, and he does, but he's still way ahead of Congress.
Yeah, but most of them will get reelected this year, so it's easy to hate a group. It's easier, I think, to hate a group and to be disappointed with a group than it is to be disappointed with an individual. You know, there's no there's no personality, there's no affinity with a group as like there is with a president. But
Obama won by 5 million votes last time, and you didn't like him very much then, did you?
I didn't think he was the right choice for our country. I don't dislike the president, personally. It's just I don't think it was the right choice for our country. I think his policies and his ability to get things done the right way for our country is just not there.
2975633, a listener reminds us that Sally engineered the victorious run of one Vance McAllister to the House of Representatives last year, but you're not with him this time.
No, I'm not.
Was it the kissing thing was just too much for you to handle?
No, actually, we split before then. He didn't really enjoy raising money, which I think you can see from his totals.
But he's got his own money.
Yeah.
Those Subways have been very, very good to Vance.
Exactly. So I think he'll continue to self-fund. He doesn't really need a fundraiser, and that's going to be an interesting race. I will tell you, though, that with Jamie Mayo in the race, and again, you're talking about small percentages in that race, too, you may see him in the runoff with Jamie Mayo. At least that's what I'm hearing from my friends up in Monroe. They're really kind of predicting that he might make that runoff.
Well, in that race, you've got Jamie Mayo, you say, Democrat from Monroe, the mayor of the city, but also cousin Clyde Holloway is back for another.
I know, I saw that he qualified the last minute, and he'll bring that Alexandria base is I think what he's counting on. He, you know, again, when you're dealing with small percentages, it becomes kind of a crapshoot. So.
I think Clyde Holloway may be the only man to run for more offices than Steve Myers.
I wonder what the count is, Jim. Do you know what the count
is?
It's
a bunch. I tell you, about 20 times he's run. Yeah. And, of course, he's won some. He is a public service commissioner.
Yeah.
That's a pretty big job in itself.
Yeah. And I've walked door to door with Clyde. I mean, he is a really sincerely good man, and I think somebody who really cares about the state and country. And so I think his heart's always in the right place.
I see in the first district, the majority whip, Steve Scalise.
Yes, one of my clients.
got three opponents, and one of those is Jeffrey Jeff Sanford. I think he's representing the lady who's suing Charlie Roberts, the former head of the Alumni Association at LSU. He's from Baton Rouge.
Okay.
And he's running against Steve Scalise, and I think, let's see, he is a libertarian.
Yeah, that's one of the weird things about Congress. You can run for a seat where you don't actually live in the district, because Lenore Whitney actually doesn't live in the 6th, and he doesn't live in the 1st.
Right.
So it's kind of interesting that you can do that. But I think once you win, I think you have to move into the district.
Nope.
Right? You don't? Mm-mm. You can always live outside?
Mm-hmm. You can, wow. If you're a citizen of the state. In fact, at one time, Cleo Fields lived in Richard Baker's district, and Richard Baker lived in Cleo Fields' district.
Really? That's
sure
a great bit of trivia.
Sure did. But I think Edwin Edwards would have had a better shot of winning had he run in the 5th district.
Oh, that would be an interesting. Yeah.
Because they have about a third African Americans, and he would have presumably gotten most of those. Now, with Mayo in, it might have changed some. Yeah. But if he made a runoff against Vance, Vance is wounded, let's face it.
Mm-hmm. That would have been interesting, huh? Both of them would have their problems. No, I don't think they would want to talk about bedroom indiscretions on the campaign trail. I think it would have become irrelevant.
Marital indiscretions?
Marital indiscretions would have become irrelevant on the trail.
I don't think anybody ever caught Edwards on videotape, though.
No, he was a little bit smarter about watching.
But he never shied away from being known as a ladies' man, even when he was married to the lovely Elaine, the former U.S. senator from the great state of Louisiana.
Yeah,
okay, question from a listener. Cassidy Landrieu runoff percentages. What do you think?
I think, you know, Cassidy wins. I don't think it's going to be huge.
50.2, 53.6. What do you think?
I think 53, 54.
53
something like
or 54? That would be a rout.
I do.
That would be a route. You think she's going down?
I do. I think the plane thing, I think people maybe look at the plane thing and discount it. But in addition to being illegal and very unethical, it's also arrogant, you know, arrogant that she's flying around on private jets at the taxpayer expense is just shows how out
of
touch
they
is.
Well, they both have fodder if they show up for debates at the same time. Of course, Bill Cassidy is against Obamacare, but here's a guy who's a multimillionaire primarily through public health care. He was a practitioner in the public health care system in Louisiana for many years and a very good doctor.
And so is his wife. His wife's also a doctor.
Very good doctor, too.
Very good doctor. And as a matter of fact, I think that's his killer commercial, if you want my opinion, his patient commercial would be a killer because I've talked to some of those people. They love Dr. Cassidy.
Well, thank you, Sally. Thank you for listening, everybody. Back tomorrow. Stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.